generando, aunque ya en forma dispersa, y no creo, yo creo que ya no como setas, yo creo que ya no van a seguir porque la carga contraria es muy grande de los mismos cárteles, pero también del gobierno de México y de Estados Unidos, amigo.
O sea que en la medida que se han venido decapitando, por así decirlo, algunos cárteles se han reproducido, se han multiplicado y ahora es mucho más difícil atraparlos a todos. ¿La magnitud del problema se mantiene o ha bajado?
Se lo voy a decir de esta manera. El mercado está, la comercialización del ser humano está, la industria del secuestro aquí en México es altísima, la desaparición es cosa cotidiana, la trata de personas con fines de explotación laboral y sexual, el tráfico de órganos, o sea, todo lo que es el comercio con la vida humana está. Cuando estamos diciendo que ya no van a responder a esa cabeza del último de los Zetas, ¿verdad? Z42, y el último Treviño, estamos diciendo que de todos modos estos Zetas quedan en la oferta del mercado. Y entonces lo más seguro es que otros cárteles los coopten para ellos y ya desaparezca prácticamente los Zetas, se asimilen a otros cárteles o si es que tal vez ofrecen resistencia, los van a acabar. Eso es lo que yo estoy diciendo. Si un policía federal o un miembro del ejército le están pagando cierta cantidad y el crimen organizado le ofrece más, si estamos en el mercado, pues se va con el crimen organizado, que ya pertenece a un cártel, ahora ya su jefe ya no está, ahora hay encuentra trabajo en otro cártel, es un mercado laboral, pues se va con el otro cártel. ¿Sí me explico?
Todavía está por verse cuándo los gobiernos de Estados Unidos y México empezarán a arrestar a los banqueros que lucran con el dinero de los criminales y los oficiales de gobierno que los solapan a cambio de una tajada del jugoso botín. En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Estás escuchando el Informativo Pacífica.
Te invitamos a que te unas a nuestras redes sociales por Twitter en info-pacífica o por Facebook bajo el nombre de nuestro productor Fernando Velázquez e Informativo Pacífica. Escucha el noticiero cada día de lunes a viernes en Pueblos Sin Fronteras wordpress.com.
Va cayendo moribundo, luchador ensangrentado, redondo el sol encarnado, va cayendo al mar profundo.
Pueblos indígenas en Guatemala se organizan para impulsar un proyecto político y candidatos a puestos de elección popular que representen sus intereses. La información con Mario Rosales.
El Consejo del Pueblo Maya de Guatemala, que agrupa a colectivos indígenas y campesinos, anunció que se constituyen en proyecto político para contender en el proceso eleccionario que se llevará a cabo en el país este año. Su propuesta, afirmaron, se basa en impulsar una agenda en beneficio de los pueblos originarios, lanzando candidaturas de indígenas al Congreso de la República.
En esta etapa, el primer paso que plantea el Consejo del Pueblo Maya hacia ese deber ser, que es el Estado plurinacional, es justamente la disputa del poder legislativo paulatinamente.
Actualmente el país cuenta con 158 diputados en el Congreso, de los cuales solo 8 legisladores son indígenas. Una escasa representación para una población de casi 6 millones de mayas que según la ONU habitan en esta nación. El actual sistema político ha generado millones de indígenas que viven en la pobreza y con empleos informales, afirma un activista. Algo con intención, añade.
Se ha históricamente desplazado al pueblo, en este caso el pueblo maya, los pueblos indígenas, sencillamente porque se responde a un Estado que está construido desde su concepción para favorecer a una clase específica en este país.
Por ello, la importancia de que haya más participación de indígenas para ocupar escaños en el Congreso, afirma un dirigente social. Pues hasta ahora las leyes que se han creado solo han provocado el despojo de recursos naturales en las comunidades y el empobrecimiento de la población originaria, pues afirma que los políticos tradicionales son patrocinados por el gran capital.
Por lo tanto, deben responder a los intereses de esas empresas. Y por otro lado, también es importante señalar de que en los últimos años se han aprobado paquete de leyes que favorecen a las transnacionales.
Por el momento, ningún candidato indígena ha manifestado su intención por contender por la presidencia del país este año. Por ahora, los esfuerzos de este primer proyecto político netamente de mayas está enfocado a ganar diputaciones. Mario Rosales, Telesur, Ciudad de Guatemala.
Tu amor revolucionario que conduce a nueva empresa.
En el marco del segundo aniversario del fallecimiento del presidente de Venezuela, Hugo Chávez, su sucesor, Nicolás Maduro, destacó los avances sociales logrados durante su gobierno.
Y a 2 años podemos decir, comandante Chávez, valió la pena tu lucha, tu sacrificio, tu esfuerzo. Tu lucha no se ha perdido ni se perderá. Aquí está el pueblo de pie, unido, trabajando. Aquí está tu Fuerza Armada. Aquí está tu patria. Seguimos teniendo patria. Comandante Hugo Chávez.
Hugo Chávez Frías falleció el 5 de marzo del año 2013, conmocionando a los pueblos del mundo.
No existiría ni capitalismo, ni socialismo, ni ninguna de nuestras religiones, si no somos capaces, desde donde estemos, con nuestras creencias ideológicas, políticas y religiosas, salvar este planeta.
Ministro, se va acuñando el término de que esta es una revolución bonita, de que esta es una revolución del amor, en el amor al prójimo, en el amor a la tierra, en el amor al universo. Es decir, que además lo incorpora dentro del plan de la patria y lo plantea, aunque algunos se burlaran de ello, sobre salvar el planeta, cuidar el planeta, preservar la naturaleza.
Cuando él me dictó, yo la primera reacción le coloqué salvar al planeta Tierra. Y él inmediatamente que le mandé el papel me llamó y me corrigió, me dijo, no, el planeta Tierra no se va a destruir, lo que vamos a desaparecer somos nosotros.
Chávez vive, la lucha sigue. Es una premisa que nos va a guiar y nos va a orientar para continuar y profundizar la revolución, que estoy segura que con el pueblo unido y cada vez más consciente de lo que tenemos gracias a esta gesta lograda por nuestro comandante, vamos a continuar de batalla en batalla, de victoria en victoria.
El marco 2030 como el año donde la América Latina y Caribeña y Venezuela dentro de eso tenía que lograr esos grandes 5 objetivos históricos.
Vamos a sacar adelante, porque yo también me incluyo ahí, lo que son esos 5 puntos, esas 5 tareas, el plan de acción estratégico para salvar al mundo.
Chávez dejó otra cosa que no está escrita, que quizás Bolívar en una oportunidad dijo que no se podía legislar sobre ello, pero que sería como un séptimo poder, un poder espiritual, de volcar la mirada al pasado, a la historia nuestra, no para poltronarnos en la gloria de nuestros abuelos, sino que nos sirva como un resorte para enfrentar la realidad latinoamericana y transformarla.
El camino es duro, el camino es difícil, pero es el camino.
Es el camino, sí.
Así que, comandante, misión cumplida. ¡Chávez vive!
Yo bravío, al pueblo lleva en su mente, y el pueblo lo lleva a él, cabalgando en el corcel de la esperanza creciente, y del oriente hasta el poniente, su abrazo lleva el amor, tremolando el tricolor, amarillo, azul y rojo, y la herencia del arrojo del padre libertador.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. A nombre del compañero Toshli y del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Where's the meeting?
So, yeah. So more and more police are arriving as we speak.
Can you tell me how many police officers there are and who they are?
Right now we've got 1, 2, 3, a second parking. It's a sergeant. It's the guy that was harassed us during the. Even higher if you can, David. But that's as high. Okay, that's not so bad.
So we're talking with Keith McHenry, who's at the main post office in Santa Cruz. Would you like some more people to come down to witness what's going on?
Yeah, we need as many people to come down as possible.
New people who have cell phones or have video possibly can come down.
Yeah, people that can take pictures of the cops in case that happens, something happens.
Okay, and how many people are there who are non-police, who are part of the... Tell us about the free market and what this the really free market that you're doing today.
Yeah, well, there's only really, there's been a steady stream of really interesting people, but it's usually about 10 people at any given time here right now. Hi, how's it going? So it's such an unusual situation.
And have you
I'm doing a live radio interview right now on Free Radio Berkeley, Santa Cruz. So, you don't have your phone right now? Yeah, you should do that. So, yeah, that's more important than anything, Abby. And then you can take pictures.
So, Keith McHenry, have the police officers spoken to you and said what their concerns are yet?
Well, they said, who gave you permission to put this giant banner up and started harassing us about that? It's the same way we had the banner for the Christmas meal. So we're doing the same thing.
Now,
the big giant Put Up Bonds banner.
Where does the banner extend from where to where?
The banner?
Yes.
It goes from a light pole to the tree, just like we did in back in Christmas. Yeah.
Is it blocking traffic?
No. It's just a big giant banner. You can walk under it.
Is it interfering with airplanes flying by?
No. Nothing like that.
Are birds being caught in its web and being perhaps mangled?
No, nothing like that.
Has it got obscene words on it of some kind?
Well, it says food, not bombs.
The other thing that's
interesting is we did do... are you cool, Abby? Oh, cool. Okay. So, it's been really pretty interesting.
And
if we can pull up your end,
so it sounds like you're still trying to put up the banner.
Well, we're re-putting it up. We had it a little, we're thinking if we make it a lot lower, that might eliminate anything.
So how high is this banner?
Oh, that's a good idea, Abby. Yeah. It's pretty high, it will be ultimately so high you can't even, you have to jump up in the air to touch it with your hands,
So
anyway, if people can call their friends to come down here, that would be a huge help.
So again,
how's it going?
We're talking with Keith McHenry, who is at the main post office.
And actually, this is a rebroadcast from a week ago, so don't rush to the main post office. The actual live Bathrob Spears broadside show is about to start. Don't go away.
If we pull this one much higher, then the whole thing will be a trip, and it'll be cool. Am I on the radio still?
You are. yes, you are still on the radio.
Okay, cool. That's great. Oh, there's more people. There's people bringing their artwork here. It's getting to be a fun thing. I think everybody should come down.
Has anybody got a video device and they're videoing any of this? That's
not
important.
Yeah, we're trying to get that together. That's part of our project.
Okay, so anybody has a video device, it sounds like Food Not Bombs activist Keith McHenry is looking to have somebody come down with your cell phone or with your video device to...
No, we want it higher. Yeah, our goal is to get it as high as
what's going on. Yeah, okay.
And then if we pull maybe high, well, you might be right. Maybe you're right, pull it down. Great. Cool. That's a good idea. Eleven? What a great name. How's it going? Okay.
I'm talking with Keith McHenry down at the main post office. You say that the main concern the police have is that they don't like your banner up there. Is that the problem?
We're happy to do that.
Now, what exactly, what are you inviting people to come and bring? And that was a rebroadcast, and I don't know why my show is being rebroadcast right before I do the new broadcast. Can be very confusing to people just tuning in. You are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, or Freak Radio Santa Cruz, at 101.3 FM and freakradio.org. Coming up next is the live March 5th, 2015 edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. And as for those who are wondering,
wondering about the banner situation at the town clock. I guess it was on Friday during the really free market. It was resolved. A police supervisor said, just don't tie it to the tree, tie it to the pole, actually. Both of them are technically illegal, but I think that's a way of recognizing that the law is an ass in the situation, just a pretext for harassment. And the police department, seeing a lot of people there, thought otherwise. We're going to be talking more about a later incident that happened with Curtis Relaford of Follow Your Heart, when he was cited for amplified sound several hours later. But first, the show.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mere into miracle.
And welcome to Bathurst Fears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris. This is the twice-weekly show, the shorter version, which I do on Thursday nights. And the call-in number, in case you want to join with any updates from the student strike up at UCSC. We've invited students to call in. I have, anyway. And I did speak to a student activist earlier at the jail who was there just as the students were being released, who were arrested. I guess it was on Tuesday? Or Wednesday, one of the two, for blocking the fish hook coming from, I guess, 17 down into Santa Cruz. Or is it from 1 down to Santa Cruz? Anyway, it's somewhere between the two. There's a lot of criticism of these folks. I had hoped to get activists on the air to talk about why this was felt to be necessary. Of course, I'm sympathetic. I think... probably wouldn't be too sympathetic necessarily if it were personally affecting me. And I, interestingly enough, I was headed downtown at that time, but I happened to take another route, not because I knew this was happening, but just by coincidence. And I didn't get stopped. In fact, I thought the whole thing was over, but it wasn't. And it did block traffic for several hours at least. And there was apparently initially charges against six students for felony conspiracy, which sounded very familiar since I've been charged with that although the charges were dropped after a year of costly shenanigans in court, thanks to DA Bob Lee and Rebecca Young, his hatchet woman. And the same, sort of a low opinion of these felony charges when they're going against protesters, peaceful protesters. Disruptive, yes, in this case. Not in my case, no. I was simply a reporter. But the point, of course, is you have to compare the kind of disruptions that are happening, massive disruptions to people's lives caused by the huge escalation in tuition. Micah Posner sent out an email pointing out that when he went to UCSC in the 80s, it was $500 tuition. Now, what is it, $18,000? And you have to get these student loans, which puts you deeply in debt. It's kind of like suddenly every student is a third world country or, I don't know, a little Greece or a little Spain, whatever you will. And students are standing up and saying, no, we're not going to, you know, let the banks balance their budgets on our lives. And I think, or the universities privatize and cut back services to poor people in order to pay off the well-to-do and turn them into profit-making enterprises for some. It's, it's something that has to be fought, and one way to do it is through the direct action to show the outrage that people have, the determination people have, which will, I guess, the most immediate objective is to stop the tuition hikes that are being planned over the next few years. I did report on that when there was a strike or a series of strikes or a series of occupations, actually, this last fall up in Berkeley and here in Santa Cruz. And I'm hoping to report on it now, but I really can't report on it very well unless I get some help from the students on campus. I did get a call from Ramona, who called in and wanted us to show up and help her and the students, and I brought that up at the Huff meeting. We had a sort of a small turnout. Some of our members were not feeling well. I myself am a little bit peaked, but still trying to punch in there occasionally. So if anybody wants to call in, please do give us updates, clarifying the issues. There actually is a pretty, I'm not sure how detailed it is. If you go to Santa Cruz Indie Media, which is the one I always go to, you can get the latest sort of video peekaboo at the whole thing from Alex DeRosi, and there may be some more updates from the court. John Melkin actually has posted something. Highway 17 blocked for 4 hours by UCSC students protesting tuition hikes and police violence. And John has, of course, been a leader, and he's a free radio broadcaster as well. He's also a writer. He actually gets into the good times, though his articles apparently get cut and somewhat censored. My name got struck from one of his articles. He is concerned with police militarization, whether it's the Bearcat, which he's done a lot of research on. Both of us have. I forwarded my research to him, and he's put it to good use. He's also been concerned about the license plate recognition software. Again, issues that I certainly support him on, but I consider to be relatively peripheral and superficial compared to, let's say, the day-to-day harassment of poor people and the attacks on basic survival realities of homeless people. And I've accused Malkin of essentially getting stuck in a kind of a classist rut by not really being, giving due weight or attention to those, although we all choose the subjects that capture our fancy or our passion. That's true. But I noticed that, for example, SCRAM, the Santa Cruz Resistance Against Militarism, is, aside from using this repeated tactic of simply going to city council, which I'm hoping, if enough people show over a determined enough period, they may get some traction. There's supposed to be a second city council meeting coming up this month in 2 weeks where they are going to put on the agenda Bearcat supporter. That's the armored personnel carrier that all the activists, myself included, who are concerned about militarization of the police oppose. there's going to be a, it's going to be put on the agenda as a, I guess, its use or something, and then Micah Posner may put on, may move that the whole thing be sent back. But the whole issue of the mendacity of the police department, the double dealing, the backdoor activity, and the supine submissiveness of the city council around these issues is not being, it's not on the agenda. They wouldn't want to do that to themselves. But I don't hear it in a lot in the rhetoric of the activists. And more important, I don't hear in their rhetoric concerns about deeper issues of racial discrimination and police violence, which are a national issue. And yet, it's all being kind of focused and narrowed into this Bearcat issue, which I just don't like. And this happened at the Huff meeting as well, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with. Yesterday, I could not get Huff to add to its resolution supporting the attempt to get the Bearcat sent back and commending Scram for doing so. A concern that I'm just citing now, that the other issues of local police violence, local police discrimination, be the real continuing focus, whether the Bearcat gets turned back or not. And to me, this is kind of like lemmings following the loudest moving object, or the fastest moving object, or the following the crowd. I mean, I tend to do it too, but I think it's not wise in this situation, and it's generally not wise. Although sometimes, and perhaps more than now than I used to be, I'm a fan of crowds in the sense that I think the crowd, in many cases, can have more wisdom than these experts are, these seemingly rational, cool heads that are actually leading us all to destruction with fine facts, figures, and finances. Whereas, you know, the people who are massed together are standing up against that and expressing real concerns in an angry and important way, as students. Although they didn't seem too angry in these protests. I'm looking now at Malkin's story, Highway 17 Block for 4 Hours. He wrote it, posted it today. He writes, yesterday, 6 UCSU students blocked Highway 17 to protest university tuition hikes and police violence. Again, not very specific info about police violence in Santa Cruz. Nor, as far as I read, up at UCSC, which I'd like to see more specifics on. And indeed, there is plenty of police violence. At least I know in the past, when I was recording and reporting for Tent University back in 2005, 10 years ago, when the students set up a kind of a town gown tent city on the edge of campus, and the police moved in and pain compliance, torture, twisted, created pain in order to break up a protest that was peaceful, completely peaceful. A lot of UCSC police violence by the Santa Cruz Police Department and other agencies. And, you know, so it happens. And indeed, there was some police violence, I believe, last year by the UCSC police in dealing with the strike. And I guess that probably did get some mention. But in terms of institutional violence against poor people, there seems to be just a lack of interest or ignorance on the subject, or indifference on the part of both activists and the general public, or many activists. So what we do is, if you look at this story online, you can see pictures of sheriffs and riot gear and police cars on the highway, and numerous police cars, guys with their helmets who are, you know, police officers, people with protesters with their faces covered and hoodies up and caps on and signs, "I am not alone," meaning both alone and a loan, as in a debt. And lots of pictures of police going after individual protesters. There's a helicopter, a couple of shots of a helicopter. Some of the protesters are wearing goggles. And, you know, it's kind of a graphic series of photos. There are pictures of the police addressing the problem that they have to cut the pipes and the cement barrels that were used to create the lockboxes across Highway 17, I guess it was. I'm not sure if it's 17 or 1, but right where they intersect. And a lot of traffic backed up. And there's a bit of commentary. Very little specific discussion of the issues I've noticed, and either here or in the Sentinel, where you get a lot of ranting and raving about how these privileged students are should all be jailed for years and expelled, and indeed they have been suspended for 14 days, I understand, six of them. They've all been released. Two were released on $5,000 bail, and or was it $5,000 bond and $50,000 bail? I'm not sure, one of the two. And the other four were released, I guess, OR. And Malkin writes, there's one felony conspiracy charge to, you know, create a public nuisance, a failure to obey a lawful order, or an executive order from a peace officer, a series of overcharges. I mean, they didn't like it that they blocked traffic for 4 hours. You know, I mean, I understand that. The real question, though, for me here is the issue and the silence of the community on this issue. You know, oh, you can find a better way to protest. Yeah, really? Show me, you know. There probably are better ways to protest. I mean, they could have chained themselves to police headquarters, but this is a very dramatic way of getting the whole community to notice. Indeed, antagonizing and alienating some people, making them stop and think. And I haven't yet heard or read somebody saying, you know, I was trying to drive and I had to stop and it really pissed me off. But then I thought, wow, these students have a point. And I'm curious now if any of that happens, but the Sentinel, one would wonder if the Sentinel would print it. And I don't see much yet on Santa Cruz Indy Media. Again, I'm hoping we can get some commentary from the students up there. If anybody has been witnessed any of it or has friends who are students, please get them to call in, 427-3772. Other articles I'm noticing, the Democratic, Santa Cruz Democrats have called for to return the Bearcat, I believe. Let me look it over carefully. People's Democratic Club. Democratic Central Committee of Santa Cruz County has rejected the militarization of local law enforcement and is calling for a new action by the Santa Cruz City Council. And that reads, in order to help encourage, develop, and implement policies that prevent military equipment from flowing into law enforcement agencies throughout Santa Cruz County, we move that the Santa Cruz County Council's approval of the Bearcat, Ballistic Engineered Armored Response Counterattack Truck, that's what Bearcat stands for, the CAT is Counterattack Truck, from the Department of Homeland Security purchase, be brought back to the Council for reconsideration, and staff be directed to bring back alternate proposals for rescue vehicles that are less militarized for Council approval. And, you know, I had not been aware of this huge pressing need for rescue vehicles. It suddenly sort of, it emerged when that became kind of useful language for adopting armored cars with gun turrets, in this case gun turrets removed, but gun turret access that police could shoot out of if they want to. And lots of stuff about, oh, if they'd only had it for the baker and butler, and only this other, if they had it when the guy escaped from jail, it would have been so different. And I express my skepticism, you know, I don't, well, I don't know. I am not a person that can really realistically comment on those two, but there are probably those who've studied it more closely who can. Of course, this motion by the Santa Cruz Democrats also calls for there be a binding city policy for grant applications and their acceptance that ensures timeliness, transparency, and full public disclosure and input. Notice they're avoiding any criticism of the police department. That pisses me off. Partially because, of course, I feel the police department needs a lot of criticism on other grounds, mostly for how they treat poor and homeless people. That's my main focus, and has been for years. But also because in this particular case, it was a slimy backdoor process that involved inaccurate, if not false, if not lying information to the community and the city council. And it's not mentioned by the great Santa Cruz Democrats. It isn't really mentioned much, or maybe it is. I've got to re-examine their most recent literature, but I don't see it being focused on in the literature of Scram. They're trying to soft pedal it because they want to go along with the mythology that the police department's really a bunch of good guys and there's some bad decisions and they just have to sort of, you know, tweak things a little and everything's going to be fine. That is simply false. And if that were simply the case, there would not be people marching across the country and there would not be people getting shot down in the streets. The reports of people shot down the streets are two or three a week by police, unarmed people. You know, of course, that's rapidly followed by a lot of police department releases. Oh, this person had a criminal record. He was reaching for something in his waistband. It was a coincidence he was black and the people who shot him were white. This kind of stuff isn't being addressed in Santa Cruz. I mean, are we going to wait for somebody to get shot down in Santa Cruz for this to happen? Luckily, I do want to tip my hat to Raven Davis. She's an African-American activist who's looking for a job, by the way, if anybody's got work for a person who's good with computers and, gosh, I don't know how I would describe her skills, but they involve being able to deal with information, which is the reason I'm happy that she's working on this particular project, information we just got finally from the police department regarding the race stats. One officer who was accused by a number of people, African-American and otherwise, of racist practices, as to say, profiling people who are black, ticketing people who are black, and for things that white people are also doing that he's not ticketing them for, ticketing black people disproportionately. You don't see the Santa Cruz Democrats coming out with resolutions about that or calls for investigation of that, or Scram, for that matter, calling for any of that stuff. Hopefully they will. Not hopefully. I would urge them to. But I've already heard rumors that certain individual members of Scram are trying to get Huff kicked out of Scram, or Keith McHenry, I think, added Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, our group, to the Scram coalition. And there are a number of activists there who don't like that. They didn't say why they didn't, but and some of it may have to do with older conflicts that Huff has had with some of these folks who are often eager to jump on board the established channels that, and particularly in old homeless struggles, that some of us felt sold out the homeless. But in any case, there are a series of protests. Well, there is one protest coming up on Tuesday at City Council on March 10th at 4 o'clock, as I understand it, from the literature being distributed by Food Not Bombs, an attack on the Bearcat, the ballistic, engineered, armored response counterattack truck, and there's going to be food, and there's going to be hopefully some merriment. Maybe there'll actually be some real action beyond simply going to the city council and sedulously waiting in line to speak for 3 minutes or 2 minutes, depending on what Don Lane decides, our mayor, or their mayor, if you will, and then trucking away again. It's getting a little boring. It's getting a little tedious. It's getting a little obvious that it's ineffective. And I understand the point. You keep coming back. You keep raising the issue. But I think you also have to raise the heat. And you need to go to the police department. You need to go to the city manager. You need to go to the people who made these decisions in the back door and who are responsible for it and demand they be held accountable. And this is hopefully something that others will begin to insist be done as well. Huff, on Monday, some of us are going to go to a meeting of the Public Safety Committee. And I may have more on this on Sunday, the day before. That's on the 9th of March. Public Safety Committee is meeting. It's a three-person committee that supposedly oversees the fire and police departments. And Huff's specific focus on this, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, my particular focus, why I brought this to the Huff meeting, was because of the motion by David Terrazas, who's been on the board, the chair. Let me put it this way. He's been on the city council. Hopefully he won't be on the board of supervisors. Hopefully he'll never be the chair. But he is the chair of the public safety committee, which is happening on the next meeting of this little group of three council members, himself, Cynthia Chase, and Pamela Comstock, Monday evening at 6 o'clock. It's either in the council chambers or it's in the little council conference room, which is right behind the council chambers. In both cases, it's open to the public. And I have requested that Terrazas examine the data that he says he wants to wait until September to examine, September of this year, around how police and rangers are enforcing the so-called stay-away law. And I'll be talking more about this in a moment, but let's have a bit of a musical break, and I'll take a drink of water or two. And you can call in at 427-3772.
Efficiency in progress is ours once more. Now that we have the neutron bomb, it's nice and quick and clean and dirty done. Away with the sense and enemy, but no less valued a property. The sense and war, but perfect sense.
Song later, perhaps. Kill the Poor by the Dead Kennedys. So, at the end of January, I sent Terrazas, who's the head of the Public Safety Committee, an email. And what I notice is, in the stay-away law, which I've talked about at length, and which is, I haven't gotten a lot of reports of people being stay-awayed in the last month and a half. It went into effect in the middle of February, which allowed the police and rangers, at their own discretion, once they issue any kind of a ticket, to give stay-away orders for increasingly long lengths of time over increasingly large periods, places, and increasingly large stretches of property, parks and park patrolled property, park ranger patrol property. And this is done without any kind of oversight from the courts or anything. And there hasn't been a lot of discussion about this, or a lot of, there's been a lot of discussion, at least for some of us, but not a lot of citations issued that I've heard about. And if you have any, give me a call and let me know. It seems we have a caller now. Let's see who's on the line. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Robert, it's Colonel Maxwell. Terry.
Hey.
Colonel Terry calling.
You listening to my show, Terry?
Yes, I am.
Good for you. Thank you.
Are we on the air?
We are on the air, and now's your chance to blast me.
Well, no, I want to compliment you, first of all, on, you know, all the positive things you do for the Santa Cruz community and the leadership you provide to the homeless and others and lots of other people who need that leadership representation and need that advocacy, you know, as well as you focus on larger issues in the community. We don't always entirely agree. But I'm, and I won't bring up the ones we do, but we can list them.
Mm-hmm.
But on your topic today, you know, we all have different life perspectives and different life journeys, as I have discussed with the Dalai Lama across a picnic table for 90 minutes.
Mm.
Now, I won't go into what he said, but I will say, in part, he emphasized we decide the steps we take. Sometimes they're imposed upon us. But we take an even more interesting journey inside our heads, consciousness, etc., and that we can help each other take, but that one we take even more individually and alone.
Terry, let me interrupt just to ask, is there a particular issue that I was talking about you're referencing, or is this a new issue you're bringing up?
No, I'm bringing up, first of all, to compliment you highly, okay?
Well, thank you, man. Appreciate that.
And also the station. I really applaud okay, the station's continuity and the support it's had. I'll have to remember to contribute more money to it.
And, you know, you can join the station, Terry. You're a man of a lot of outspoken opinions, and you're not afraid to speak them out. And if you want to, you can come on the air and speak them out here.
Well, we may do that. I look forward to that, Robert. We can talk about it maybe if we see each other at Penn University on Monday. If I'm in town, I'll be there.
Sure, or call me if you'd like.
Understood. And are you there?
I'm still here.
Okay, anyway, on tonight's topics, look, what I am is I've had an interesting journey, unabashedly.
Which topic, Terry?
I've watched things, you know, at the national level.
I'm sorry, which topic are we talking about?
Down locally, and I've worked with Ralph Nader when I was young and ideal.
Terry, sorry, let me, again, I need to know, which topic are you referring to?
Girls win on this planet.
It's hard to get in here. Terry,
okay, and I care whether it's Santa Cruz or nationally or in Iran or wherever.
So, Terry, again, are we talking about the Bearcat? Are we talking about stay-away orders? What are we talking about?
Jump onto the Bearcat.
Go ahead.
Okay, my military experience planning for contingencies inclines me to be simpatico with the police department leadership's concerns and even the individual officers' concerns for their safety because of the possible contingencies include somebody with automatic, high-powered, rapid-firing weapons taking over a school or a bank in downtown Santa Cruz, and the local police being tasked to immediately contain that and, if possible, rapidly dispatch or arrest the perpetrators who are a risk to the community, etc. And I don't see this as an armored vehicle militarization. I see it as, unfortunately, contingency planning for the fact that we now have, by the millions worldwide, AK-47s and AR-15s that the bad guys can use, even in Santa Cruz, to take over, as I say, a bank or a Safeway or a school. And the cops have got to have a way to approach that building with the rapid fire armaments of the people who may be inside, and also to block both doors, both exits. And in addition to moving rescue people in, as they've said, I'm very disappointed the police department, Robert, hasn't made a more logical contingency planning, you know, fact-produced case. I'm also disappointed they weren't honest with the city council and the community in terms of this is what we wanted with notice and so forth. But I think a fair, fully informed debate leads one to conclude that the Bearcat can be declared not to be used against peaceful assembly under any circumstances, but only if there's a weapons threat to officers and the public where the Bearcat would be expeditious in addressing that threat and hopefully defeating it. That's the end of my pitch.
Well, I mean, I'm glad to hear the person who, you know, opposes what I think is probably the predominant view of people who are calling into the station generally, if and when they do call in, which isn't very frequently, but have. So, Terry, because you were, I think you may have been at the, were you at the forum at the Loudoun Nelson where there was a debate on the Bearcat?
I missed that.
You know,
I'm
think
sorry.
You would have been.
Did the cops send somebody competent to debate it?
No, they asked. I'm told that Abby Samuels and John Malkin and others who are trying to get that together sought to get somebody on the other side. You might have been a person who, you know, would have taken that position. Also, later that weekend, KSCO invited me to come on the air, and I got too ill to do it, but I got, you know, a couple of Food Not Bombs activists to do it and talk about it. I think Michael Zwirling is actually not too sympathetic to the Bearcat, but he looked, too, for someone like yourself who has favors the acquisition of this vehicle, and he couldn't find anybody. So, you know, you might want to contact KSCO because
well,
they
I'm
might be up for that.
Well, I'm sympathetic. KSCO has to decide to invite me because apparently I'm too smart for them or outspoken.
Well, maybe they just didn't think of you. I mean, you know, he's Zwirling is not always, you know, the smartest turnip in the patch, you know.
Well, I disagree with that. I think Michael's pretty smart.
I like
but at
Michael.
Any rate,
I like Michael, but that's not the issue.
Are uncomfortable.
I mean, he acknowledged that he, for example, wished he had done a live broadcast of the debate at Loudoun Nelson, and he kept hitting himself for not doing it. So he may have forgotten you, you know.
I'm sympathetic to reality, respecting reality, and I'm sympathetic to competent good government that's in balance. So I'm not overwhelmingly saying let's get armored vehicles in every little community in the country, but the Bearcat meets, I believe, a legitimate need that can be defended for such emergencies as I've described, certainly not to be utilized to break up campus protests or peaceful demonstrations in downtown Santa Cruz under any freaking circumstances.
Mm.
And I think that could be addressed, that concern. If the city council would just have some spine about addressing the issue and putting it in balance.
Well, what
I'll save those arguments for another day.
No,
well,
no,
fine.
No.
Maybe we can have a
yeah.
A
don't go
on
away.
KSCO
don't go away. Let me read to you, Terry. Let me read to you what the police department's policy is on this. I had a hard time. I mean, Chief Vogel asserted it on January 13th. He was given a special time by Don Lane to assert it. I was annoyed at that Lane didn't give time to the critics to, you know, to ask some probing questions like why the hell was this acquired with a phony deadline, which, you know, they dishonestly stated was December and there's no such deadline in the applications. I've looked through the applications and, you know, I could be wrong about that, but I haven't been able to find one yet. But in any case, Vogel gave this statement about the Bearcat rescue vehicle is specialized equipment designed for specific purposes, not intended to be used for routine patrol or day-to-day operations.
Mm-hmm.
The department will use it, and this includes but is not limited to the following eight things. Notice the words is not limited to public safety emergencies where life-threatening conditions exist, such as you've talked about, the extraction of persons at risk, the need to insert police, fire, and emergency medical services into a dangerous environment, ballistic or projectile protection, high-risk vehicle stops, high-risk warrant service, which we're told, I've been told by the anti-Bearcat people, is what the vast majority of uses of the Bearcat is, to break into homes and serve drug warrants, is what they're using it for, is what I'm told in other cities, not, you know, Santa Cruz necessarily.
Okay, well, those drug warrants have to be issued by a judge who's heard their reasons and applies criteria to evaluate whether they're valid, you know, warranted.
Well, seventh is active shooters. Eighth is unsecured crime scenes. Yeah, I'm no fan. I don't care if a judge okays it. I don't care if God okays it. As far as I'm concerned, this prohibition nonsense is lethal to the Constitution and to the safety and security of our community. But that's my opinion, you know. So
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I perhaps there's a way to have a policy directive that's a statute passed by the city council in the county that says under no circumstances will this be used except in clear and convincing circumstances of threats to the officers from high-powered weapons or other projectiles or explosives, and a need to rescue members of the public and protect paramedical people, etc. Under no circumstances will it be used to dissuade a crowd that is merely protesting or you know, practicing their constitutional rights to assembly and to address, make grievances known to the government, et cetera.
I mean,
I think it's hard to write several paragraphs that make that crystal freaking clear.
Well, remember that back in...
The most poorly educated policeman, that he cannot go fire up the Bearcat and run people over with it.
Right. No, I mean, Terry, you may remember back in 2011 and during the Occupy protests, I was there for the initial confrontation on, I guess it was Wednesday or Thursday. In fact, I was later charged with felonies for being there that were eventually dismissed. But still, what people did was they lined up, they linked up in front of the building, and, you know, the police arrived with this, you know, with chemical weapons, which they didn't use. They arrived, and they also apparently sent for the Bearcat, or they sent for some kind of vehicle that was nearby in Scotts Valley that's similar to the Bearcat. And in other words, it had the, and they've claimed that one of the problems they had was they would have been able to use this vehicle if it had been available, or they would have considered using it. And we're talking about, you know, police decisions in this situation not to arrest people under that situation. I would think was a wise police decision. I think there would have been riots downtown that would have been very serious. But, you know, the fact is the police indicated, as I understand it later, that they weren't just going to use the Bearcat under rather pristine, oh, dirty bad guys shooting it out with the public holding hostages, the kind of stuff you see on TV that justifies every new expansion of police and military power.
Did the Scotts Valley vehicle arrive in Santa Cruz during what you're referring to?
You know, that's a very good question. I understand one of those vehicles that was relatively nearby was, and again, the police had hours to get it because it became clear this was an occupation that was going to continue. And indeed, the police used other means. They used negotiation, and then I think they did a very disreputable thing. They went after high-profile activists who had nothing to do with organizing this protest in order to simply punish the activist community. But, you know, they got people out of there by negotiating, and there was some damage done to the property, but nobody was hurt. In a poor Wells Fargo, I'm crying
well,
all over the bank.
And my politics again, Robert, as you may know, I learned long ago at places like the White House and working with the Congress that both parties are corrupt up to their eyeballs.
For sure.
And cannot be trusted and relied upon entirely. And the right wing and the left wing are both stupid about different things, in my informed view. So my politics, I'm a member of the smart wing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Terry, let me
I'm
ask.
I'm progressive on most things because that makes sense and is supported by the evidence of the evidence.
Yeah, let me ask you this, Terry.
On some things I'm not wackadoodle left-wing loony about.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this, because this is really the subject I was talking about. You probably heard me mentioning it before you came on. I'm more concerned about the day-to-day police behavior in Santa Cruz toward poor people. And that, to me, is far, you know, it's not a hot-button issue for, you know, sofa bed liberals who stay at home, or even people who go to the Red Church and chat once a week at the, you know, at the Penny University. Thank you very much.
Okay.
And then don't do shit the rest of the week around these issues. Although I could be wrong. Maybe you guys are all active later in ways I'm unaware of, and I hope you are.
But in defense of Penny University, it's an intellectual dialogue activity. It is not formed to be a social advocate or action group. But you feel welcome to contact Paul Lee and suggest you have a chance to suggest several or more things.
Oh, Paul's invited. You know,
more active
you know,
about
Paul,
and mechanisms to do so.
Paul has invited me to come to the Penn University. For those who don't know, is a group that meets from 5 to 6:15 or so every Monday at the Red Church. It's open to the public. There's often some interesting speakers. And Terry, you're often a regular member there, and you speak up on the issues as well. And it's also available for people who want to ask questions and interact with the speakers that Paul Lee has invited in. And as I said, I was invited in once, and I occasionally go through because I'm usually next door in the Red Church's, you know, homeless meal interviewing people, which is what I'm about to get back to because I want to play some of those interviews.
Okay, no, do that.
Yeah.
Every Monday afternoon I'm in town, I make an effort to Penny U because it's therapy for thinking smart people.
But let me ask you, though, before I go, have you any concerns about SCBD behavior generally, or are you pretty happy with how they're treating the community?
SBCD, I'm sorry.
Santa Cruz Police Department.
Oh, not entirely, no. And there's no excuse for any uniformed or non-uniformed officer of the Santa Cruz or County Police Department or the local highway patrol offices ever to abuse, harass, or deny explicit constitutional rights and courtesies to everybody. And it annoys me and upsets me as a caring, ethical person who cares about justice. No, I agree with you, Robert. That's why I compliment you. I myself have observed too much abuse by Santa Cruz downtown and county policemen.
Have you actually experienced any of that or witnessed any of that?
I've experienced rather excessive treatment, but okay, over. Did I stop at a stop sign or not? And I said I believe I did. And you said you were going 3 miles per hour. Okay, that's minimal.
Mm-hmm.
The harassment that the groups took downtown in the park, the 5 a.m., 3 a.m. harassment by the county police was despicable, in my view. Absolutely. And there's a black police lieutenant in the Santa Cruz County Cops whose name I won't mention on the phone, but my gosh, what a Gestapo behaving like pig he was. I observed it myself when I went down numerous evenings to monitor.
How long ago was this, Terry?
During the protest, during the sit-ins on the county steps.
The Peace Camp 2010. Uh-huh.
And the county building steps.
The Occupy.
People ask me, I get up at 3 in the morning myself a few times. I didn't see the worst of the evenings, but I saw some.
Mm-hmm.
Just getting up to drive down and check, as had been requested by somebody active in the group. It's tragic. And I said to some of the officers, you guys are going to have to decide whose side you're on, ultimately, because the revolution is coming. And are you on the side of the corporatists and the Wall Streeters and the county, building contractors and the more authoritarian members of the county board, or are you on the side of the people, all the people? And all the people means everybody gets there. I'm a descendant of a signer of the Declaration of Independence and a guy who voted for the Constitution. And I take it seriously. If we want to have a successful, just society, we have to comply with the constitutional rights of everybody. Now, I don't agree we have a constitutional right not to be monitored if we use the telephone to conduct terrorist activities, but that's another discussion. But I'm a smart guy, and I'm informed, and I've seen the realities. I don't see that out of superiority. It just happened.
But there, I want to thank you for calling in and invite you to call in again. I appreciate your doing it. This is the first time you've called, so...
No, I've called the state. I've called you guys before. Anyway,
oh, really?
Robert,
okay.
First time I remember. Get back to what you need to do. By the way, I'm going to the 350.org meeting in a few minutes at on 17th Street. What do I talk? What am I? The Grange Building.
And what is
Santa Cruz 350.org at 7.
What is the subject of that meeting?
I think it's organizing and using Bill McKibben's recent comments,
which
around, I went up to here at UCSC.
Around what issue?
Anyway, anybody here listening? 350.org is having something at the Grange at 7.
And again, the issue there is?
Are we going to save the environment, I think?
Okay.
What are our choices?
All right.
Why don't we demand, again, all of us smart-thinking people demand we transition our economy to solar and renewable and stored electrons. We could do it instead of be hostage to the fossil fuel behemoths.
And the address of this meeting is at?
It's the Grange Building on 17th between Capitola Road and the, I want to say Access Road, the Frontage Road.
Fair
on
enough.
17th Street. It's the Grange in Seabright?
Right. Okay.
No, anyway, the Grange. People know where it is.
Okay.
Where the Freedom Forum is.
Thank you, Terry. I appreciate that.
Okay.
Have a good meeting.
Anyway, Robert, keep up the good work.
Thanks,
amigo.
Man. Bye-bye.
Okay.
And that was Colonel Terry, who I'm often on the other side of issues with. Terry is, Terry and I have different opinions on Julian Assange and probably Chelsea Manning, although I'm not sure about that. That was a little earlier. And Edward Snowden. We've taken strong, differing positions. I think they're patriots. He thinks they're traitors, or at least that's been the gist of our conversation. But that doesn't change his keeping an eye on local events and being concerned about them, and us sharing views around concerns about police misconduct in Santa Cruz, sheriff misconduct. We disagree on the Bearcat issue, but oh well. So there.
So I mentioned I was going to get into what was happening a little bit around the issue of essentially an opportunity to raise issues with, well, it's not really an opportunity because I don't think they're going to be listening, but to, well, to make a good faith effort, I guess that's always what we're really talking about, around the Public Safety Committee's, well, at the moment, its unwillingness to put on its agenda the issues of the stay-away orders, which, at David Terrazas's motion, when they passed the stay-away expansion law that gave the police and Parks and Rec Rangers vastly expanded powers to ban people from large areas in Santa Cruz for long periods of time without any court process, the Terrazas, in an attempt to respond to what was said by even right-wingers like Annalisa Cube of Take Back Santa Cruz, that they're not concerned about people who are sleeping, that's not their issue. And when Raven Davis, this African-American activist who has been working hard on this issue, came up with the stats that showed, yeah, but it's mostly sleeping and being in a park after dark and smoking that have been the tickets, and they've mostly been issued to homeless people. So the same thing is going to be happening, this is what my speculation is, over the next 9 months. They'll be giving it tickets for these things, and they'll be banning people from the areas for larger and larger and longer periods of time, and people will be either ignoring these issues and getting even longer stayaways or getting put into jail, and creating more points of friction between people who are just trying to survive and the authorities who are, I don't know if they take delight in enforcing these laws. I'm sure a lot of them don't, but some do. And the important point is all of them do tend to enforce these nasty, discriminatory, what we call them sunset laws. They used to call them sunset laws in other cities 100 years ago. They were laws that said no blacks here after sundown towns is what the phrase was by the author, a guy called Lowens, who wrote a book about sundown towns and how they weren't just limited to the South. They were all over the place. You know, Negroes not allowed after dark, you know, is the signs they had. And now it's homeless not allowed after dark. Homeless are the new niggers. And that's a rather sharp way of talking about a second-class citizen who's treated like a piece of shit. Who's treated, you know, in a, as though they aren't, don't have any worth or human value that is worthy of respecting. And that is, as the Supreme Court stated in the Dred Scott decision back in 1856, that they're the African-Americans, people born in slavery, even they move to free states, have no rights that the courts have to respect. They're property. And we have this new sort of situation that's been documented by Michelle Alexander in her book The New Jim Crow, which talks about a whole new underclass being created of African Americans, sort of a reinstitution of a kind of a 21st century slavery, where even if you're out of jail, you can't get a job, you're on parole and probation, you have this massive record, you can't get loans, you can't get food stamps because of the massive and selective use of drug war legislation, which was originally an electoral tool for white politicians to get elected, largely white politicians, and was also a way for right-wing Republicans to and right-wing Democrats to beat the drums, and they're still doing it. Although in other countries it's been found, like in Uruguay and Portugal, it's much more effective decriminalizing drugs. It actually drops drug use and increases drug recovery, and it's far less expensive. It's, you know, that's why I'm thinking Santa Cruz should be trying drug injection and drug inhalation centers, even if it's done as a underground activity, as the medical marijuana was initially in Santa Cruz, an underground activity. And it should be supported by sensible law enforcement officials, as medical marijuana, even when it was illegal here, was supported. The clinic, there was, you know, the clinic at Maple Street. It wasn't a clinic. It was a distribution center at Maple and Cedar Streets, which was the original home of Free Radio Santa Cruz back in the early 90s, was doing its thing long before, years before Proposition 215 was passed by the voters and made medical marijuana theoretically legal in California. So, what about the stay away order stuff? Well, Terrazas has said, in order to respond to this, oh, we don't want to punish sleepers. Oh, we don't want to punish homeless people. We have nothing against the poor. This is all to deal with bad behavior in the parks, is the claim. But if the bad behavior is being in a park after dark or sleeping or smoking, when it's a figure established that 70% of the homeless people smoke compared to 18 or 19% of the general population. It's a form of, you know, self-medication that I think homeless people use because they're under a lot of stress, as one possible explanation. But in any case, to criminalize homeless people is wrong, and what it really seems to be more seriously wrong is that there has been a movement in the last few years spearheaded by Take Back Santa Cruz, the Clean Team, and others, to drive homeless people away, to cut back on homeless services, to increase laws that criminalize poor people. So there is a statewide right to rest law that has finally made it into the Senate. It's been introduced by a senator there, Senator Liu of the Los Angeles area, the Soquel district in Los Angeles, in the Senate. And I'm not terribly optimistic about its chances, but I'm glad it's there. We in Santa Cruz have essentially the virtual criminalization of homeless people. Now, you don't see it all the time, you know. You don't see it. Police are not, you know, they have limited resources, so they can't arrest everybody under the sleeping ban, which would, you know, fill the jails 10 or 15 times over, more than that. Well, 10 times over. They're already filled, so they'd need another... If you want to jail 1,500 to 2,000 people, and jails that take 300, 400 people, you got to build 5 new jails, which would be great for the profit-making jail industry, for those who are investing their dollars there. In any case, Terrazas, the council member, to respond to Annalicia Cubes and to respond to the concern by Michael Posner that this is an attack on people who are sleeping, they got no legal place to go, there's no shelter for 95% of the homeless people in Santa Cruz. So yeah, they go sleep in the parks. They go in the parks at night. You know, and even if they do absolutely nothing wrong but fall asleep or cover up with a blanket or smoke a cigarette, which they don't even litter. They just put it out. Nobody's around. Or they're just there after dark. That is 70% of the tickets. And the stay-away orders that are then issued for before they even get to go to court, where they'll be creamed anyway because courts are compliant to the city council and the police, even though these are clearly unconstitutional laws in terms of how they're applied, in terms of how they affect a population of people. And that's Terrazas' response was, well, we'll examine all this data in September to see if there is some kind of discriminatory process and also how a social worker is doing in dealing with the problems of people in the park. And this is the latest bullshit that you frequently see from the city councils. They're going to send us social worker. They got a DAP, Downtown Accountability Project, that's going to help folks out. They've got a smart solution. They've got a 180-180. But the reality is that the overwhelming majority of homeless people are outside. They have no place to go. They have no place being offered them. And it is criminal for them to do what all the rest of us do every night after 11 o'clock at night. Or for those who are late nighters after 1 o'clock at night. So Terrazas said, well, we'll examine this data in September. And my response was, hogwash. Usually examine what we've already seen happening over the last year and a half, where we've had this limited stay-away law, which has been used for one-day stay-aways. Now it can be used for a week, a month, 6 months, and a year. And you haven't even looked at the data or responded to the data for the last year and a half. Well, at this Public Safety Committee meeting, I've asked him to put this on the agenda. And as of yet, I have not heard that he has. But what I'm going to do now is take a quick look at the Public Safety Committee agenda, which should be out. It should be out 72 hours in advance, at 72 hours business day-wise in advance. And let's see if we can find it here on the internet. I'll take a look and see if I can get some good news. So here's Public Safety Committee meeting agendas and minutes. And for the next 7 days, no events found. For the next 30 days, my. Well, it looks like Dear David and his staff person have not posted an agenda. So what they're doing, unless they're posting it somewhere else, is they're holding an unauthorized meeting and they can't take any actions. Of course, this would require a court action to make sure that they do. Someone would have to spend, you know, hundreds of dollars to get it into court or have some expertise. Maybe we can get some volunteers. By the way, if you want to call in, and like Colonel Terry just did, you can, 427-3772. But it's interesting. There's nothing posted online regarding the upcoming meeting of the Public Safety Committee, which means, I suppose, if they post it, they have to post it where it is available 24 hours a day in a public spot. I don't even think being online qualifies. But it's interesting that it's not online. Usually agendas for both the committees of the City Council, which there are only a few, and the City Council itself and some of the advisory commissions, of which there are a number, are posted either right outside the City Council chambers at 809 Center Street. If you've been to City Council meeting, it's the main door, right to the left, is before you go in the door, right across the aisle from the bathrooms. Or they're posted next to the City Council offices, which is the next building over as you walk toward the library and then to the left. And you'll see the offices of the City Council members, and you'll also see where the City Council agenda for commissions are posted. And I think the Public Safety Committee agenda has in the past been posted there. But this area is closed after 10:30 at night, or 10 o'clock at night, I'm not sure which. This was, again, part of Danette Shoemaker's edict to destroy a protest that was happening in 2010 called the Peace Camp 2010. Again, denying people constitutional rights, doing it without any public input, doing it in the face of a court decision in 1996 that found, when Michael Rotkin was mayor, and he tried to do this by going to court to get an injunction to stop a protest at night at City Council, and the judges told him, you can't do that, this is the government building. Well, now this gets done as a matter of routine. It got done in front of City Hall, and that happened in 2010. It got done in front of the county building. That happened in 2011. And you have this increasing privatization and sequestration and militarization of space. And by that I mean, if you walk into these areas and a security guard, Big John, one of the first alarm thugs who kind of heaves his weight around between the library and the City Council area, sees you, he will not only harass you, he will try to call the police on you, even though you are trying to exercise your basic rights. And I have many disagreements with Razor Ray, a very sharp-tongued activist you can find online, but I do respect his suggestion that when first alarm security tells you to do this or that, say, call the police. If you're in the right, you know, I'm simply exercising my rights. That doesn't mean I have a lot of regard for how the Santa Cruz Police Department operates most of the time in terms of how it deals with poor people. But a lot of the operation of the police and the first alarm security is through fear and bluff. It's a form of local terrorism against poor people, is what it is. And it's, you know, it's based upon some real things. Guys with guns and uniforms and courts behind them and money who are the agents of the merchants and the wealthy property people, they have some power. And it's up to us to find countervailing power. And I don't know if we're going to find that by going and talking for 2 minutes each at City Council or even at this Public Safety Committee meeting on Monday at 6 o'clock, where I'm going to be and a couple of other Huff activists will be too, maybe serving some food even. I think Pat Colby has said she's going to be serving Cafe Huff down there. But it's important to demand that these folks, and let the city see, that we are making reasonable, important requests, that there be true respect for the basic civil rights of the entire community, not just pandering to the fears of people who would like to turn the city into a gated community with poor people hidden away or kicked out. So, I also recommend, if you want to get a kind of an amusing but still rather educational treatment, I think I mentioned this before, of the Bearcat, the armored vehicle, and that's what it is, Colonel Terry's position notwithstanding. You go to check Indy Bay, Santa Cruz Indy Media, and look up a statement by Doug Loisel. I thought he was going to call in today. What he wrote is Monterey County Observer weighs in on the Bearcat. He has some interesting stuff. And he writes it in a rather humorous vein, but he also writes it in a serious vein. A selling point of this vehicle, he writes, is that any expense is justified because it might save one life, in this case the lives of law enforcement personnel, who are valued at a greater rate than homeless, poor people, and just about everyone else. Case in point, when was the last time you saw a funeral procession on the news for a commercial fisherman? Commercial fishermen put themselves in harm's way to provide the public with delicious and essential food, and it is one of the most dangerous jobs in the United States. And in fact, police work is no doubt dangerous at times, Loisel writes, but they are pushing it when they continually try to use the threat of an ever-present danger as an excuse for irresponsible spending and overall poor behavior. The police are well-paid professionals. The following is a list of occupations in the United States considered more dangerous than police work. Loggers, fishermen, pilots, flight engineers, roofers, structural iron and steel workers, electrical power line installers and repairers, drivers, sales workers, truck drivers, farmers, ranchers, and agricultural managers and construction laborers. All these are considered jobs that are more dangerous than police work, certainly not as romantic. It's good to be a political darling if you're a police officer. And he doesn't give a footnote to this, but I remember reading from Our Enemies in Blue, which is a book which is highly critical of many police departments and police work often generally throughout the United States, noting that police officers originate in slave patrols to catch slaves. I have not researched the claim extensively, but I have never heard any police department spokesperson claim it's not true, that these other professions aren't more dangerous than the police. But again, I haven't had a lengthy conversation on this topic, and if anybody wants to do that kind of research or work, I'd be curious to have that information myself. So, 6 o'clock, March 9th, City Hall. We're demanding that Terrazas review and act on the clear evidence of discrimination that has been amassed over the last year and a half in the parks, which we finally squeezed out of the Parks and Rec Department, and we squeezed it out of the police department. It took a while to do it. We're currently also looking at racial profiling by Officer Azua, which Raven Davis is working on now. I understand she's agreed to work on that stuff, so good for her. We have found that Officer Azua, I should say, that's Officer Barnett, who is an officer downtown who isn't seen around there much. He may have been rotated out just in the course of police department rotations. But he was 7 times more likely to ticket black people and white people as a percentage of their numbers in the population. They're 1.4% of the population. They're getting 10% of the tickets downtown. And there were also specific instances that where there were anecdotal accounts of harassment. I also, I hope I'm going to start playing some voices from the street. at the last Huff meeting, an activist, African-American guy. I'm not sure what his actual racial origins are. He's darker of skin, so it may have been that he claims that Big John, who is a first alarm security guard, who might be quite familiar to you, he's the tallest first alarm security guard. You often see him around the library patrolling the city hall. Not only harassed Kelios, that's the guy's name, the man of color who made this report yesterday at the Huff meeting, but he called him a nigger bitch. And, you know, that, frankly, language, as you can see, I use the words freely, perhaps more freely than some would like. That's not so important to me. What's important is a report that he followed Kelios and tried to stop him from washing some feces off his shoe, that he harassed him in a very specific way, and the kind of harassment I've seen John doing to other people, for which he's not held accountable. And I have to admit, I've never filed a specific complaint against Big John. I do bring it up when I see him, usually in a somewhat sarcastic and derogatory manner. That is, I believe, one way of educating those in the community as to what his situation is. And I'd be happy to have a dialogue with him on the street about his behavior. The same is true with Officer Azua. The same is true with Officer Hernandez, who threatened Brianna Brewer, by her account, and her mother, and Brianna's husband at a Thanksgiving meal 2 years ago with a gun for taking a plate of food out. Or Officer Vasquez, who dropped Richard Hardy face down on the sidewalk. All these issues, which I continue to raise, and others do too. Hats off to Steve Schnarr. Hats off to Brent Adams. In the alternate media that we have some access to, Good Times does not provide that access anymore, apparently. At least not for Schnarr and for Malkin. Or at least not for Schnarr. I don't know about Malkin. We raise it when we can, but we have to raise it more persistently and more pointedly. Now is the time to raise these issues when it is quite clear that nationally, people are rising up to demand an end to this. It's focused on Black Lives Matter because it particularly impacts Black and people of color. But it also impacts young people. It also impacts poor people and homeless people. It impacts the entire community, really. This is a privileged class, a Praetorian Guard of armed individuals who are not required to live in the communities they live in. They have a special insulated status. They have very powerful unions that get them what they want, that protect them from any kind of police review in California in any meaningful way. So it's a civilian review, I should say, of the police department, citizen review of the police department, community review of the police department. And that's why these issues need to be raised very specifically. What is your use of force policy, Chief Vogel? How many people have been tased by you? What were the circumstances? Who tased them? Which officers? Which officers drew their batons? And how frequently? What about the when an officer, you know, threatened to draw his gun or did draw his gun? All I could get from the police department making the request about the specific times this had happened was some numbers, rather than any particular incidents, who it was done to and where it was done. Why? Why would the police need to conceal this kind of information? You know? Unless, well, when a group becomes privileged, they feel they, you know, they don't want to take any chances. Why reveal anything if somebody might give you trouble with it, rightly or wrongly? And once you're, you know, once you got status and privilege and you're up on a podium and you can shout, Butchie Baker, Elizabeth Butler every day, all day, whenever you want money, whenever you want respect, whenever the city council, you know, or politicians who are using these issues to get elected on do that too. And then you can scare away Bearcat protesters who don't want to, you know, mix up their protest with any kind of disrespect for Officer Butchie Baker or Elizabeth Butler. No, you know, that. What about the homeless people who've died in the last 10 or 15 years? Or the people who've been shot dead by police nationally and in the state? The man named Africa in Los Angeles, Oscar Grant in the Bay Area. Happy John Dine in Santa Cruz in 1997. Anyway, we're not going to forget him. We're not going to forget, for example, we're not going to forget what the police department is refusing to do now. And I'm going to continue to bring it up. At least I forget it all the time, but then I remember it again. So maybe that's the good thing. Let's hear some interviews from the street. And we'll take it from there. Again, the call-in number here is 427-3772. I'm Robert Norse. Name of the show is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. And we have another 40 minutes, so call in if you'd like, 427-3772.
It's Thursday, the 27th. Thursday, the 26th. Amen.
Where do you go when you're looking for love? Do you see it in the faces and graces from above? When you know it's right there in your baby's eyes, and there's grandma and grandpa trying to fly. You're looking for love. Well, you wore out the Harrison record all this was past. 'Cause you knew in your heart your love was going to last. Now your window's open, your window's closed, and you're hanging out your laundry and everyone knows you're looking for love. Whoa, whoa, whoa. I got online trying to find a date. The mouse fell off the table and it bit me in the leg. And the library staff called 911. And they dragged me to the hospital and I met this nurse again. She was looking for love. Whoa, whoa, whoa. So we had a bunch of kids, went down to Mexico, got a Mexican divorce. One day happy, one day free, broken hearts for you and me. There's no time for us to get a Mexican divorce. You're looking for love. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
And we've been listening to the music of
Jay and Jack and Mark.
Thank you. To a man with a new strategy here at the Food Now Bombs meal for avoiding the nasty sleeping and other tickets that are plaguing the poor. Do you want to say who you are? Is this anomalous?
My name's Oz. They know me as Oz.
Go ahead, Oz.
Anyways, they don't give me tickets anymore. And what I just tell them, I says, hurry up and give me the ticket. Matter of fact, give me that ticket right now, I'll sign it. I says, I don't care what you put on it. You put everything you want it on you want. Look, I have no credit. I am not paying it, the thing. It's going to collections, and I'm not going to pay it anyway. I says, you know what? You're going to write me the ticket? Hurry up. I'm wanting to get out of here because, you know what? And they don't give me a ticket because I tell them I'll see them in court. Write whatever you want on it. I ain't going anyway.
So when was the last time you actually were approached by an officer and you had this interaction?
Well, I know most of them now, and I think most of them know me now. They really don't give me a whole lot of problems because I don't create any problems. But every once in a while, you get a new one, and I don't know. It's probably been about 3 months.
And this was a sleeping ticket the last time that you ran into?
Oh, no, it was a sleeping ticket. This was some other stupid thing. I don't even remember what it was.
Sitting on the sidewalk?
Well, no, because I usually drive on the wrong side of the road when I'm riding my bike, and sometimes they like to pull me over for that. And I says, look, I just want to know what's coming at me before it hits me. At least I have a chance to run away. In Europe, by the way, that's the way it is. You're on the other side of the road on your bikes. It's probably a smart thing. And they don't like it. And I says, you going to write me a ticket for that one? Fine. I don't care. I'm not paying it.
Are you going out of your way to frustrate these poor police officers?
No, I just don't like rules because rules are made to be broken. It's one person that screwed it up for everyone out there. So now there's laws because of that. And you know what? It's like the guy I saw in Westcliff the other day. His dog's pooping all over the damn road, and he's not going to pick it up. And I told him, you're being an asshole, and you changed it for everybody. Now there's laws against that kind of stuff. I suggest you go pick it up.
And his response?
At first, he was kind of reluctant. He looked at me and stared, but since there was about 15 people standing around looking at him like he was that A-word I just said, he turned around and went and go pick it up. And before he got there, there was a couple that were walking, and the gentleman stepped in it, so he really felt like poo, I hope.
Now, was this a poor person, one might say a homeless-looking person, or was this a middle-class person?
No, this guy was some guy had a, you know, he had a dog. He seemed pretty high class. He seemed like he had his head shoved up there too far, though.
Colorfully put.
Did I say that too correctly?
No, not at all.
I was being descriptive without being rude.
Indeed. Anything else happening downtown? You care to comment on, like, the new performance spaces?
I went to the city council meeting when they proposed all that. I think it's a good idea, but we could have done it with yellow yarn just as effectively by sticking it in the cracks. Most of the places they marked off, for instance, we're standing here right in front. Well, we're at the post office now, and I can look across the street right at Bank of the West, and I can see a yellow markings on the ground for a proposed spot for entertainment, so to speak. Nobody's going to sit down here on that corner. That's let's just say me and Chip don't get along.
Chip, the Downtown Association doodah, who has only one name, or at least one that he reveals to us?
The very same Chip. The Chip with the chip on his shoulder. And I think he's a trust fund baby, by the way.
Well, anything else you wish to add before I meander on to the next victim here?
No. Well, if we're going to talk about downtown, the only thing I suggest, if it's going to get out there, and I have suggested this often and over again, I've actually spoke with the hook and ladder team for our fire department to make sure what we can do to mosey on through, because I suggest we shut it down to all vehicular traffic and turn it into outdoor cafes like they did in Europe, where you can sit out and listen to music like we can hear now in the background.
If you can afford it.
Affordability is a lackluster term, because when people come to Santa Cruz, they come here for tourism. They come to the beach to see the ocean and stuff. And when they come into downtown, they don't want to sit inside a restaurant. If they could sit outside, you go to any outdoor restaurant in Santa Cruz, and it's packed.
If you can afford it.
I don't understand your affordability question. People can't afford it. There's a general populace in this world right now that can afford that.
Well, I would say most people here cannot afford to pay and sit outside.
Yeah, but you're talking on a whole different term. I don't want you to talk about that one. You're changing topics on me.
Well, you know, poor people are generally what I talk about. So.
Oh, no, poor people have their topics, too. But in general, these people aren't poor. Some people are so rich, so poor, all they have is money.
Thank you, sir. Little music here at the Food Not Bombs Meal under the eaves of the post office. And what is being served today for the discriminating clientele of Food Not Bombs?
Oh, a wonderful salad, fresh made. A rice and vegetable soup.
And numerous bits of bread and such.
A stuffing casserole with vegetables.
Steaming, I might add.
Yes, very nice and hot.
Cool. And how many people have you served today, would you say?
Ooh, I don't know. Maybe
You have to ask Abby. I think Abby has the counter.
Okay, I will look. I will ask her. And we've been talking with?
David. Trump.
And with?
Dave.
David and Dave. Yeah. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Abby, how many people have been served today, would you estimate?
I just got here like 15 minutes ago, so I don't know.
You have no idea. This man might have a notion. How many people served today?
I don't know. It wasn't as many as we normally do, maybe 30, 40 people.
Yeah, close to 40.
Well, the weather is a little iffy here.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't. Also, I don't know if people got checked because on Friday because it's the end of the month. Typically, the end of the month is the biggest.
Today is February 28th.
Yeah, so the actual technical end of the month is today. But sometimes, in past years, they were very particular about, you know, Social Security and general assistance and stuff like that coming out really on the first or the Monday after the first. But seems now I get different stories because we ask questions about that to plan on the meals. And, you know, sometimes food stamps and stuff seem to come out, you know, like maybe the 20th, 21st of a month sometimes or something, you know. It makes the planning a little hard.
Mm. Now, you've told me that regarding SCRAM, the new group that you are with, the Santa Cruz Resistance Against Militarization, which is reportedly planning after its cowardly retreat at the last city council meeting to return to once again, please, sir, we'd like some justice. We have had our 2 minutes. Goodbye. Thank you very much. Is that the plan for the next city council meeting?
We're going to have a lot of people show up. Hopefully it'll be jammed. We're going to hand out the signs again. We'll have food again.
The signs saying?
Get back the Bearcat. But we had a very complex strategy of things.
Give us some of the intricate details.
I can't give too much, but we've had meetings with every single counselor. Every single council member. We provided them with this amazing scrapbook that Abby made of all kinds of details of she didn't have it here, but
I'm just looking for something else.
Oh, okay. All kinds of things, you know, about, she's even been doing research on ballistics, density of armored vehicles, stuff like that. We also
IQ and bank accounts of each of the council members.
No, that part
we missed that one.
Leave that to others. But it's been an interesting project trying to move things in our direction, and it seems to be, we have a huge, like, people are pretty outraged about the whole thing, the public. I did a table at the farmer's market, and we have like hundreds and hundreds of signatures.
Last Wednesday.
Not every Wednesday, but last Wednesday. And I had all these people coming up to me to sign the petition, find out how they can get involved, that kind of stuff. And it's, you know, for organizing around a municipal issue that's got national repercussions, a national issue that's the local edition of it, it's been pretty interesting. You know, Berkeley just passed a whole bunch of legislation around this.
I'm assuming something about this, about tasering and limitations on the police department, cameras, things of that sort.
Yeah, and there's also a 2-year moratorium on drones for the city and stuff like that. So, and
are they going to stop harassing the homeless? So that'll wait till next year.
That'll have to wait till next year.
Well, I know that SCRAM itself, but there's been some controversy, you tell me, about Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, being on the SCRAM literature, even though we, of course, are an endorsing organization, and thanks to your meddling, we've been able to been put on the literature. Now you're facing flack from some of the more elderly and distinguished people on the
group. I don't know if they're elderly, but there are people that have wondered whether
Huff deserves.
Yeah, I don't know, and it's kind of a weird thing because, from my perspective, because I thought any group that endorses, even groups that we are not
a Nazi party.
Well, we haven't got that yet, but we've had almost, from my perspective, almost that far have endorsed. And
such as what?
No, I'm not going to say.
We noticed a little self-censorship happening here.
Yeah, absolutely.
You thought he was candid. Well, up to a point.
Up to a point. You know, I'll talk about my acid trips and stuff like that, but I'm not going to be talking about that.
You won't be criticizing your ally.
Not until they're no longer
like me,
allies.
Who freely criticizes.
Yeah, maybe you might learn something from that.
Yeah, perhaps so. So is that the suggestion? You think that's, I mean, I was critical of the failure of Food Not Bombs and other groups to maintain a higher profile, if not at the city council last Tuesday, or I guess it was last Tuesday, then to do something in the interim other than simply beat a hushed retreat under the bogus worship of the Butler Baker Memorial shit that was going down in city council. I thought that was despicable, disgraceful, and also gave the wrong impression to the community. You were pandering to a group in the community. They might have said, oh, how respectful of you. Oh, how dignified. If you're going to get down and respect a bunch of bullies and thugs who happen to be killed in the line of duty, I don't much appreciate that in terms of how these people treated homeless people in Santa Cruz.
Well, see, we actually did a certain amount of investigation as to, and actually I mentioned at the meeting that not everybody was in favor of supporting these officers because, and so it was assumed that I was talking about sexual harassment.
That was part of it, but Baker was notorious.
Yeah, but then I went on to point out, no, after the supposedly getting help with sexual harassment and recanting and taking sexual harassment classes and stuff.
I never heard you did any of that. Did you actually hear he did that?
Yes, I did hear that.
Where did you hear that from?
I heard that from Micah Posner. So, anyway.
I never heard that, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, so then I pointed out that that's all well and good, and that's if that happened, that's a great thing, and we should honor that. But that we did not hear that in regards to the homeless and his treatment of the homeless. So I pointed that out at the meeting.
Which Michael Poe just said, we have to fight these battle by battle. We don't want to expend all our capital.
No, actually what he said is he had no idea if that was true or not.
Ship from Shinola, yeah. Right.
So anyway, but just to avoid a
split in the organization.
No, a political pitfall where the media and the community start saying we're just completely
anti-police.
Totally anti-police.
How could you be anti-police considering the fine reputation they have in Santa Cruz?
Yeah, but if you want to win on something like this, you've got to
go along with the people in the middle. You got to get the broad center, right?
No,
or the center broads or something like that.
I don't think it's that. It's just that it's, you don't want to add, you know, for people that don't know what the hell's going on, you don't want to give them some reason to hate what you're doing, particularly when you start having lots of popular support. So it's a matter of just that. And our belief, we were not sure, but a couple of days before, it was our understanding that there would be a memorial service out in front like there was last year. And then we thought, well, that could look really kind of crazy. So anyway, that's
what happened. But what about this business of excluding Huff from the literature?
Well, that's coming up in a future meeting as to what the policy about that, because we don't really have any policies. Just some people, you know, several people email, what's Huff doing on this flyer? And is it true that Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has endorsed, because we haven't heard them do what they're doing about it, and so on. So there's like some controversy amongst them about the having a number of groups on
the fire. Did endorse, you know, opposition to the barricade. We endorsed a lot more.
You've been showing up at every city council meeting. So to me, it was logical to put your put Huff on there because
logical, fair, just, and appropriate.
Yeah. I mean, and it's up to your group's decision as to whether you want to be on it. Was my position now because of me putting Huff on.
Now
that,
they want to exclude Keith McHenry from
now
the flyer.
Now they have to exclude me. Yeah, totally.
Everybody
but
the guy with the hat in the back of the room who was shouting shame, shame.
No, I was in the front of the room.
Oh, in front of the room. No, you were halfway in back.
Well, at the beginning when I started, I was
at the December 9th meeting, folks. This is the inside story.
Yeah, I was two feet people from the end of the at the. I was pretty.
Why are you cutting off oral communication? You demanded, and then you started shaming, shame, shaming.
Said, well, yeah,
disruptive behavior.
I wasn't so sophisticated as that. I'm going like out to use the term oral communication.
Well, more like anal communication.
Yeah, it was like more like you know, provided you lick in the proper way, you'll be given the proper nod as you
right.
they nod you out of the room.
Right.
Nod
so this
off.
Is a fascinating thing, trying to fight militarism and police all over America. So I'm trying, you know, we're trying to, we've connected with the Berkeley, San Leandro people. We're trying to connect with others in the Bay Area that are fighting against militarism.
But Huff is a little too far beyond the pale.
No, I would assume it's...
No, you think not, but some do in your organization.
Yeah, and I think that...
They have a right to their opinion.
Yeah, they might.
I'm sure they don't censor Huff out of the group.
Yeah, well, there can be debate about it. There's several of us that have an alternative point of view.
We may have to bring a bear cat to the meeting
protect
ourselves.
I think it's appropriate... Not that Huff had anything to do, or any people in Huff had anything to do with... taking over the River Street building.
Oh, we did. I was a reporter there.
Right.
And Brent Adams, who's not a member of Huff, in fact, he's a critic of Huff, is now on trial for that very same, essentially, humanitarian occupation.
Weren't you charged, even though you were a journalist?
I was one. Oh, yeah, I was charged. I faced 7 years in jail. I didn't quite get beaten up the way you did repeatedly by San Francisco police, but, you know, I had to keep going to court, paying a lot of money.
Having felony charges.
It was a new and exciting experience.
Yeah, so you know, it was pointed out by the... police department, I forget whether it was Steve Clark or Kevin Vogel. But
did Steve Clark attend the meeting? Would he have to censor the list as to who could be on the SCRAM group?
No, he's not invited.
No, he's a deputy police chief.
What
if the police department wanted to endorse SCRAM? Would you be up for that?
That might be some real debate. Another debate, but anyway, back to the original point that... The occupation was the police discussed whether to get a bear cat from Santa Clara to come over here to deal with the occupation of River Street building. So if you were...
There were snipers in the building. I mean, come on.
Yeah, right. So, like, people with tape recorders were there.
Yeah, the tape recorders, they could have been used seriously. In fact, they were used. I used my tape recorder and actually broadcast what happened when the city manager, Martin Bernal, met with
people. Right, right. And here's an idea. Can Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcast live from the next city council?
It can if you... have a cell phone open and you are essentially someone is narrating, sure.
Oh, that's an interesting idea. Okay, maybe we should have something like that.
Maybe happy to do that. You know.
Yeah, can you do that? Can you also tape it and do that? Or,
well, if I
or
tape it, of course, you know, taping, of course, is a cause for my equipment being confiscated and or me being arrested at
right,
the meetings.
Then maybe both things would be interesting.
For sure. Particularly if somebody else like yourself, as you have done on occasion, moved into, should we say, take over. But then again, that might compromise your status with some of the members of SCRAM who don't want you to be too closely associated with the Huff group.
I don't know if that's
you've got to be careful
issue.
About that. You don't want to alienate the people that really matter.
right, that's right.
Okay.
So, but that would be interesting. You know, what is it? KSCO is thinking of simulcasting it too.
Well, that's KSCO is the one that should do it. They've got the biggest audience.
They've got a good audience.
If you talk to Michael Zwirling?
Yeah. He's talked to us a bunch of times about it, and I've got to keep reminding him. In fact, I had to remind him the day, because he keeps kicking himself that he hasn't simulcast this.
He says he keeps kicking himself.
So I'm
he's not
call
kicking
him
himself very hard.
Yeah, so I'm going to keep calling and calling and trying to get that to happen, because I think that would be really valuable.
Anything happening in Orlando or Fort Lauderdale regarding food serving and anything, any activization of the anti-food activists or anti-food laws that are criminalizing food servers like Food Not Bombs in other cities in California and across the country?
Well, the... only real news I've heard recently was at Fort Lauderdale there was this kind of moratorium until Arnold Abbott, the 90-year-old World War II vet, came to some kind of agreement with the city, and then that lawsuit would be dropped. But then Food Not Bombs sued about 3 weeks ago.
I heard about that.
And so... And technically speaking, we can start getting arrested. Take care, Kyle. Take care. And apparently, we can theoretically be arrested, but They seem to be staying away right this second.
Any arrests happening in any cities you know of around food serving?
Not right now, oddly enough. The only threat I heard was before Christmas in Detroit, when a bunch of preachers were told they couldn't share. And the interesting thing about that case, that I haven't looked into it, unfortunately, in greater detail, but what interests me about that was that the law was made when it was in private receivership, the city of Detroit, during the bankruptcy period.
That's changed.
And then that changed, and it was within the first month of the actual city being returned to civilian control, to elected official control, that they started to go after priests and for feeding the hungry outside under an ordinance made by, you know, when it was under administrative control. So that's a weird thing that you would... It kind of shows that, well, elected legislature that's beholden to the public versus just a corporation running a city.
But both of them apparently are willing to collude.
Yeah, that they're working
Although
together.
You say it hasn't been happening recently.
Well, I heard one report, some reports about that at the time these priests were being jacked up. And then I didn't hear anything since, so I don't know. But what I'd like to know is, and I've been getting correspondence with people trying to start a Food Not Bombs in Detroit, so I'm hoping that happens. So we did have one that was super active there for decades, but after the U.S. Social Forum, they kind of burned out because it was so much work feeding all those people. And so they kind of disbanded after that. So
we've been talking with
Keith McHenry, co-founder of Food Not Bombs.
And you can be reached at?
At 575-770-3377. Or you can visit foodnotbombs.net. And the email at the bottom of every page, menu@foodnotbombs.net, comes to my inbox.
So nice.
Thank you, Keith.
Thanks. Stay out of jail.
Yeah, that's good advice.
And that's Keith McHenry last Sunday, I believe, Saturday or Sunday, 28th, I guess it was Saturday, at the Food Not Bombs meal, which happens every weekend, Saturday and Sunday, 4 to 6 at the outside the main post office. This was actually under the eaves of the post office because the weather was sometime rainy. I'm expecting to have on the air on Sunday, although it's not completely confirmed, poet and activist Peter Marin of Santa Barbara talking about a lawsuit filed in the city of Santa Barbara by the organization Homes on Wheels, which is a group of homeless individuals who live in their vehicles. The infamous Nuff Said Nancy McCready, as I call her. I worked with her 20 years ago down in Santa Barbara. She's was active in the Homeless People's Association and the Santa Barbara Homeless Coalition and a variety of other groups. And what they're doing down there is fighting the RV laws, claiming that they unduly and unconstitutionally impact disabled people, which is something, an angle that Pat Colby has brought up, apparently, at least on an individual case, successfully with City Attorney John Barisoni regarding the move-along law, which I'm not going to have time to play the tape about on this show, but I'll be back on Sunday and be playing you some interviews with two jewelers, street jewelers, who have been ticketed for not for violating the move-along law as it is written, which states you have to, if after an hour you're told by a police officer you have to move along and you don't, then if you don't move your display device, you have to get it. You can get a ticket for $200 or $300 or $400. But rather for not themselves moving along every hour without such a warning. And it'll be interesting to see if and when those tickets go to court, if and when the cops show up, if they take it in the courtroom of Kim Baskett, the commissioner who I advise everybody to disqualify, because I find her to be prejudiced, or at least I have in the past, in favor of the police and in favor of existing authority and hostile to activists and street people. Take it to another court, but it'll be interesting to see if she follows the letter of the law. I think she has had trouble doing that with another law, the unreasonably disturbing noise law, where I was convicted, where we were simply singing a song in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz with political contents some years ago, myself and a number of other people. So we'll see about that. Peter Marin is working with Attorney Joe Allen down in Santa Barbara to, along with activist Nancy McCready and some others, to challenge the RV laws, which is important because here in Santa Cruz, at least at the Transportation Commission level, where Rochelle Narayan, now on the City Council, was chair last year, they essentially have forwarded to City Council a recommendation, I think this is right, to essentially establish permit parking wherever in the city of Santa Cruz, they're going to make it impossible for large vehicles like Curtis Relaford's vehicle to park, because they will be limiting the parking spaces you can use to one, and there are going to be other restrictions on RVs that are particularly designed to impact people who are poor and homeless and who live in their vehicles. Although, of course, they don't want to say that. I mean, that would be impolitic and inappropriate, and might also be construed as being unconstitutional. Let's hear some more interviews from the street before we slide off into Uncle Dennis's From the Cream to the Dregs, coming up in about 12 minutes.
Very free market at 2:30. Food Now Bombs signs are...
At the very free market happened the next day, from last Sunday, where the Food Not Bombs happens every Saturday and Sunday. Very free market happens once a month, and it's quite nice. I actually got a chair for Huff from the very free market. People bring whatever they want to give away, and they take whatever is there that they want. This was done in the same place where Food Not Bombs serves, in spite of apparently some eager beaver anti-Food Not Bomb individuals across the way from the apartments who want to get rid of Food Not Bombs have been sending pictures of Food Not Bombs to the City Council demanding they be forced to move and so forth, and kicked out of the area, and that apparently hasn't yet borne any fruit. Keeping an eye on that, hopefully. And anyway, this is the very free market, which happened once a month and was happening between, I think, noon and 6 last Sunday. And we'll hear some interviews from that.
And banners are up and at them, and we're talking with
Papa John.
And Papa John, you're looking very distinguished as your beard gets longer and whiter, I got to tell you.
Insanity clause.
More than mine, for damn sure. Scraggly city here.
I hear you. It's not really a scraggly city. It's a kinky little town.
Well, scraggly city for my beard.
For yours as well as mine.
No, yours looks good. I like your beard.
Yes, sir.
I would trade, in fact.
I would trade. Tradable's cool.
Well, unfortunately, it looks better. I think it would stay on you. It wouldn't stay on me. But
we got to thank the City Council for all the good work they're doing and helping us.
I always have, as you know.
They're such a handy help. They've really been helping people a lot, All I can do is say thank you,
Now, Papa John, how many years have you been in this town?
2047.
That's a long time.
Yeah, it is.
And what keeps you here?
The people.
And any particular people you want to commend?
Everyone.
Other than the City Council?
Oh, everyone. Everyone. The Sheriff's Department, Police Department.
All your fans?
No, the real heroes are the Fire Department. Yeah. 3110, 3113, 3170, all of the above. They are the heroes.
But you were concerned about people dying, you were saying.
Well, people die all around the world. I mean, either you're part of the solution or you're part of the problem. If you have drug addiction, you should try to curb it a little bit and eat more dinner, eat food, go to roller derby, do something different than what we're doing.
I will pass that on.
Thank you very much.
And we've been talking with
Papa John.
Thank you, Papa John.
You're welcome.
What do we got over there? Is that Halloween?
I got me. So the music you hear in the background is from Country Gentleman Landscaping, Curtis Relaford, who is also, of course, the driver of the Peace Be the Change You Wish to See in the World vehicle. So Curtis Relaford is a man who's survived numerous encounters with the police. And he's also got some pretty heavy music, as you can hear, in the background. Maybe we can get you to walk without an amplified sound permit, I might add, you questionable person, you. You're causing people to dance, Curtis.
And Curtis is an African-American who is actually going to court on amplified music without an amplified sound permit for an earlier instance of parking his vehicle downtown and playing Christmas music that people were dancing to a few days before Christmas. He's talked about that on the air before. We'll be talking about this more on Sunday.
Causing people to smile and be happy, too.
Huh? Well, that's the problem. You know? How can we control people if they're too happy?
Let them go. Don't try to control nobody. Let people go. Let people be free. It's supposed to be a free country.
Oh, well, free? You got to pay, son. You got to pay.
Well, I'm trying to wake them up to say, hey, it's time to turn it back around. It's free, y'all.
So, speaking of free, have you been paying any fines lately?
Well, you got my court date mixed up. I was supposed to go to March 10th.
Uh-huh. So that's
March
coming up.
10th. That's coming up week after next.
So you're going to let me know beforehand so I can decide whether I can duck that one,
March
too.
March 10th. That's what I'm letting 1:30.
You've got to let me know more closer to the date, though.
Oh.
I've got a memory that's very, kind of like a watermelon. It's full of something.
Yeah. Okay, but if you can think of it, March 10th.
And what time is that going to be? 1:30 in courtroom.
1:30. Yeah, downstairs in the basement.
You poor man, you.
Yeah, I forgot their name. Ken. What her name? Kim.
Kim Basket Case.
Yes, Kim Basket.
Actually, Kim Basket is her proper name. You might want to ask for the police reports before the trial, because you have a right to subpoena the records before the trial.
Oh, yeah? I didn't know that.
I think so. And the way you do that is you call me at home, and I think about it, and I'll give you more advice.
All right. I appreciate it.
It may or not be helpful. We'll see.
Anything is helpful.
I hope so. Anything else happen you want to point out at this point?
No, not really. I'm just excited to be alive.
Well, you can't help that. You're here. What can you do, man? It's your parents' fault, and now you're stuck with it.
Well, where were my parents? I didn't have no parents.
Oh, well, you probably did, even if you don't want to admit it.
Wherever they was left at.
Anyway, welcome to the free market. I don't, I'm not an official representative, but here it is.
Food, not bombs.
Yeah, it's
a beautiful program.
It's a very, very free market. Which, hey, Keith McHenry, get over here. Come on. You know Curtis Relaford.
Yeah, we know Curtis. How's it going? I called him to make sure we got music on the scene.
Music, oh, I see. Well,
yeah,
nobody else
said
came.
That we're going to get in trouble, and I said, we've already been in trouble.
Why don't you remind us of what happened about an hour and a half ago?
We had a couple of cops come here and told us that we, who's in charge here? And we said, nobody. It's a collective. We all make decisions by consensus. And they said, well, we're going to take your banner down. And we said, who's against that? And I go, well, we have permission. I said, who do we have permission from? I said, from Don Lane.
Is that true?
No, of course not.
You lying dog.
Yeah, no fucking way. And so then they called the... That kind of put him off, though. So then they called...
To go on the air, by the way?
Yeah, it's okay. Then they called... I always use Don Lane as my fallback. And then or whoever a mayor is. And then what happened was they called more reinforcements. And
how many people showed up?
Just one more. But he was nice. He actually came over and said, oh, we just can't tie it to the tree. We got complaints.
Tree lovers, tree huggers.
Yeah, and they were blocking the sidewalk. But we suspect, we happen to get in a public records act, we don't know for sure, but we got in a public records act request a bunch of photos of this area, one of which showed my van saying, this is the Food Not Bombs van. We got to get rid of Food Not Bombs. They're like, you know, how should they be allowed to feed people out in public? This isn't right, blah, blah, blah. And it's miles and miles of pages of this stuff.
I'd like to see that.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And so then, and they take photos, and occasionally it turned out we did leave a couple of things here, like a pepper shaker. They took a very beautiful...
You left a pepper shaker?
Yeah, they were very beautiful. Or somebody delivered a pepper shaker to us. I don't know. It was a thing full of pepper on this podium there. Really cute. So anyway, there's a photo from those windows up there of my van parking right there. In that,
you're pointing across the street to behind the
behind the bank,
the rush in.
Yeah, behind the rush in. They some one of those windows up there, and
someone's watching over you.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I had that happen in San Francisco. Very interesting. I would I used to get like a double parking ticket virtually every time I came home to with groceries or anything on a little side street, 4th Avenue, where no one would ever drive. And I would just be loading things into my house, come back out, and the meter maid would arrive immediately. Eventually, I would talk to the meter person. I said, how do you know that I'm here?
Uh-huh.
He said, the guy up there is up in the watch patrol, and he calls the second you arrive.
Well, you've got people who really care about you.
Yeah, yeah. So it's really beautiful.
Almost like Curtis being one of the very distinguished individuals that got one of the three, count of only three citations that were given for walking in a parade. I want to congratulate you.
Way to go, Curtis!
Oh, yeah. That's still on my record.
Hello.
They ain't brung it up yet, but he's...